Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Get Yourself the Job. My name's Allison Garrido, and I'm thrilled to be your guest host this week while Jennifer's traveling. My guest today is Tom Henschel. When I was a guest on the show, you may have heard me mention working alongside an executive coach during my time in human resources. This coach inspired me to become a coach, and that coach is Tom. Tom's been an executive coach for more than 20 years, and there aren't a lot of coaches who can say that. His expertise is helping people present themselves effectively, or as he says, helps people achieve the look and sound of leadership. That also happens to be the title of his popular podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tom.
I'm really glad to be here.
So, Tom, tell us about your path to becoming a coach. I know you had a career change yourself.
Right, I did, yeah. So this is my second career. Mm-hmm. My first career was as a professional actor. Mm-hmm. I went to the Juilliard School in the drama division before there were any graduates. It was that long ago, time ago. And so my first career was as a professional actor, doing theater here, television, and did that for 20 years. And then, you know, I just knew that it wasn't going to sustain me. So I looked around for something. I knew I was going to teach, and I ended up in corporate training. And very quickly, then I moved into executive coaching.
And as an executive coach and communication expert, who do you work with?
Now I work mostly with executives in Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. So vice presidents and above, usually. That's the client base.
Great. And today, we really wanted to focus on helping people in their interviews and mm-hmm. presenting themselves in the best possible way for an interview.
Good.
So tell me, what are some things that you usually see people trip up with in interviews? Where do people stumble a little bit?
I think they stumble before they get in the room. Mm. I think they stumble with worry, fear, nervousness. I think they psych themselves out. And look, by the way, you have to remember, I grew up in theater and television, so I was always auditioning. So it's not a traditional job interview, but it's certainly that whole exchange of having something at stake, going in thinking, oh my gosh, I have to hit a home run today, and if I don't hit a home run, maybe I don't pay my mortgage this month. Mm-hmm. You know, it's high stakes games. And so it's the same thing. So when I talk with people about interviewing, I relate. I've been there. I get that.
Mm. And what were the tools you used to help yourself stay calm and present?
So the big one, which I think is hard, the big one is to disconnect from the outcome. Mm. That my job is to go in the room and be present in the room. And maybe I'm going to get the job and maybe I'm not. But that's actually not what the being in the room is about. Being in the room is about being in the room. Can I tell a quick story?
Please do, yes.
So at this point, I was probably 15 years into my career, I was doing pretty well. There was a group of us who used to meet together. It was long before the concept of masterminds, but that's really what we were. We all made our living in television. And I was tracking what I used to call my batting average. In other words, how many auditions did I go on before I got a job? Mm-hmm. And my batting average was over 50%, so that was good.
Excellent.
But it wasn't 80%. And so I was talking about it one day, and we all talked about it, right? But I was talking about it one day, and this wonderful woman, Linda Carlson, she said to me, well, how do you decide whether an audition is a success or not? And I was like, are you an idiot? Like, if I get the job? And she went, but you are not in control of that. Mm-hmm. And so no wonder you would be nervous. If that's what you're thinking about, you can't control that. What if you just went in the room and tried to be present? And I understood the concept of like, look, you know, I know how to audition. Mm-hmm. I know how to do my thing. But there are so many factors that aren't in my control. And she said, that's right. They're not in your control. But whatever they throw at you, you're going to manage it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, look, you're a professional. You can do that. Mm-hmm. And it completely changed how I thought about my auditions. So I think what I see people, I'm now going all the way back to your original question, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, what do I see people kind of get tripped up on? I think often they're just freaking out like, what if I don't get the job? And it's like, well, that's not what you're in the room to do.
Right.
And by the way, we used to say that there were audition actors, people who could walk in the room and give a great audition, but once they got on the set, they were terrible.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. But they were great audition actors. They could get the job. And look, you know, some people, right? They're mm-hmm. good audition employees. They're great at the audition. They get the job, but then they show up and people are like, no.
I have a personal story about that. I had a job early on where it wasn't the right culture fit. And I realized that when I was in the interview, I was trying to perform. And now I really, when I'm working with clients, I'm sharing with them that this is the start of a relationship, right? And like every relationship, you want to go in and be your authentic self, be the best version of yourself, but be yourself. And I think a successful interview, if you walk out of the room and you say, okay, I was me. And I'm testing out if I like them, they're testing out if they like me. And if they don't like me, if I don't get the job, I probably would have realized 3 months in that that wasn't the right job for me.
That's great.
Not every job is right for everyone. And I think that you're right. There is that pressure of they need to want me, they need to like me. And then when somebody likes you, some people don't evaluate, is this the right job for me? Because it's so nice to be liked.
Yeah. Right. And I need the job.
Mm-hmm.
You bring up a second point, which is I think often, and boy, this is really true for actors, but I think it's true a lot in interviews, is this role that you kind of put yourself in a subservient role.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they ask is okay, or whatever they want from me is okay. And, mm-hmm. and I'm just going to show up and be a good kid, and I'm going to be likable.
Mm-hmm.
And often then what I find is people haven't thought, for example, like, what questions are you going to ask?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a big moment in an interview when they say, well, what questions do you have for us? And the person goes, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good answer? Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's a horrible answer, right? So I don't know if you talk about that with your clients.
Absolutely. This is an interview both ways. You want to see if you want to work somewhere. And so we prepare a list of questions and what is really important. We also talk about, when you walk into an interview, really observing the office. What do you see? Is it the kind of place where you can see yourself working? Is it a place that people are, you know, gathered around, you know, celebrating someone's birthday with a piece of cake? If it is that the kind of environment you want? Nothing's good or bad, but is it a right fit for you? Is it a place where you can see yourself every day?
Another version of that for me on the interview is about showing up.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think that often people put on interview behavior like it's a certain kind of Sunday set of clothes.
Yeah.
To which I go, that's good. Because the truth is, it is a kind of artificial setting, right? I mean, there's a part of it that has artifice to it.
Sure.
But I do think that part of what we're also looking for is we are looking to connect mm-hmm. on both sides. If I'm going in to interview, I would like to think like, oh, I'd like to work with these people. But I'm really well aware. And by the way, as an actor, I really learned this when I started directing. And I started having to lead the audition mm-hmm. and watching actors walk in the room and watch how they self-defeated themselves. It was incredibly instructive for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same happens for the people who are interviewing you. They want you to be the answer to their problem.
Absolutely.
They want you to show up and be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So they're ready for you to show up. And I don't think that means being kind of stilted, being on your good behavior. I think it means showing up in a way that's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be appropriate? Well, I don't think that's something you have to worry about. Yeah, you're going to be appropriate. Wouldn't you be appropriate if it were your first day on the job?
Right.
You know, so that's a second idea, is showing up in a way that's authentic, but not kind of scrubbed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's hard to separate yourself and like you said, be present for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that first question that many people hear in the interview, tell me about yourself.
Yeah.
tell me how you help your clients face that question.
So I think you have two choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of two big, broad roads that you can choose to go down. And again, I hope that you've thought about it before you walk in the room, but mm-hmm. you've got two choices. One of which is, do you want to talk about what you do? right? Do you want to talk about your skills? Do you want to talk about things you've done? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to talk about who you are? And I think those are different. So if you're going to talk about who you are, which is something that people don't often prep for, you could be talking about your gifts in the world, the things that you know about yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's an exercise that I actually do with people that I call knowings, okay. Knowings, plural, mm-hmm. Things that you know about yourself. So my story is this. When I was, I don't know, young, 7, 8, 9 years old, I was the youngest of four, so there were all my brothers and sisters were older than I was, and my parents, right? So there were six of us in the house. When I was 7, 8, and 9, they all used to tell me a story about myself when I was four, mm-hmm. about how at my grandmother's 60th birthday party, this little four-year-old boy in a little shirt and a little bow tie walked around the party holding the guest book and saying to all the grown-ups, "My grandmother wants you to sign her guest book." Mm-hmm. And everybody at the party thought I was adorable. Well, what I remembered, because I, when I was 7, 8, and 9, I actually remembered that. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I liked it. And I knew that it was easy for me. And it wasn't easy for my sister, and it wasn't easy for my oldest brother, but it was easy for me. Mm-hmm. And what I knew about myself, for example, was that I was always good with people, and I was always good with words. Mm-hmm. So that's a knowing that I have. And again, I think I often do this exercise with people to think about, what did you know when you were young about yourself that made you proud? What did you know about yourself when you were young that made you confident? Because we all have that.
Sure.
You could talk about that kind of thing in your interview, tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm. You could talk about, here's where I grew up, and here was my family, and this is something I've always known about myself. That's a legitimate answer. Mm-hmm. And it's a very personal answer as opposed to a doing answer. Mm-hmm. What do you tell your people, your clients, about how to handle, tell me about yourself?
Well, I think the biggest thing that people stumble with that question is not rehearsing, not yeah. having something, a real point that they want to get across, and ending with what brought them there. So I've done this up until this point, and now I'm excited to continue my career in this, in this field, if you will. Another thing that we always talk about is, and then just be quiet. Right? It's hard to sit in an interview and have someone looking at you and you just feel like you want to fill the silence. So you tell your story and then you continue. And it's a really tricky thing for people in interviews to just wrap up and not be afraid of a little bit of silence.
Another thing, and again, it's not always appropriate, but it could be what I just did with you, mm-hmm. which is I told my story and then I threw the ball to you and said, what about you? Because mm-hmm. something like tell us about yourself, the truth is, really, what about you? Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about you. Mm-hmm. And then way there's a little back and forth going on that's a little equal as opposed to I'm under interrogation, the bright light's on me, you're going to ask all the questions and I'm going to answer. Mm-hmm. That way it actually begins to be a conversation which feels so much better for both people.
Absolutely. I think an interview is a time when if you have a lot of ideas, a lot of good stories that you can pull out based on what questions are asked, when you have those things prepared and I say floating around in your head, it's easy to just pull out those answers and be easy and have that conversational tone as opposed to, over rehearsing the answers and getting nervous or not being ready for the interviews. There's some real extremes you can take when preparing for an interview.
I'm just curious, do you find that your clients understand the concept of rehearsal, like preparing for an interview and really trying on different ways of saying certain things, trying different ways of answering the question, tell me about yourself?
Absolutely. I think that we work on it a lot together, but it's not rehearsing it 8-10 times. It's being comfortable with what you want to say and then having those bullet points and knowing what you'd like to pull out and also realizing that if you don't say every single one of those bullets or if you don't include everything, nobody knows. If I don't ask you 7 questions, Tom, that I had prepared for this interview today, no one will know.
That's right.
Right? So it's about using what you want to use at the right time and having the availability of different questions and in responses.
One of the ways I talk about this, because I talk about this in all different kind of applications, but job interview is perfect, is people say, well, I don't want to rehearse because I get so stilted. Mm-hmm. I don't want to rehearse because then it's going to come out sounding like robotic. Mm-hmm. To which I go, I understand that. I understand that it is truly a learned skill to be able to say the same words over and over and over and make them sound natural. Mm-hmm. That's hard. Mm-hmm. I get it. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I say is, then practice a lot and set yourself the goal of always saying it differently. Mm. That's the best rehearsal is, I can't say what I said yesterday. I have to say something new. Mm-hmm. And that way, the analogy that I use about it is owning the hill like a skier. You get to the top of the run, you have to get to the bottom of the hill to the where the chairlift is. Sure. Well, there's not only one way down the hill. There's over there where there's moguls and over here where there's trees and right or in the middle where it's nice and broad. You always have to ski down a different path. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the day, you really own that hill. Mm-hmm. Same thing for your material around tell me about yourself or whatever it is. The whole point is to not rehearse it. Because what if they take you down a new road? You don't want to go, oh my gosh, I don't know this hill. Oh my gosh, it's uncharted territory. And it's never. It's always about you. There's always an answer.
Absolutely. I've never memorized presentations. And I give quite a few presentations about job search and the general process of finding the job you love. And I never memorized something because I always thought I wouldn't want to sound like a robot. I wouldn't want to sound like I wasn't engaged and I was just reciting the words that I was supposed to say. But interestingly enough, I was working with Dale Carnegie in a Dale Carnegie leadership program. And it wasn't until they mentioned it that I realized, that's right, if you memorize a script, what if you forget the script? That wasn't something that had occurred to me before. I just didn't want to sound like a robot. But what if you have all this information and then it's gone? You've just blank.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Well, but again, it's not like you're doing Shakespeare. It's your story. Just mm-hmm. keep, just, you know, there's always another path down the hill. Mm-hmm. It's like, who cares? Like you said, they don't know what you're not telling them. They don't know that you just jumped a paragraph. They don't know.
Absolutely. I have a client that I'm thinking of that I actually spoke with this morning, and she's in a role right now that's not the right fit, and she's really struggling with the idea of going on an interview because she's not feeling confident.
Hmm.
Tell me, do you have to help people a lot with their confidence and how that impacts their communication?
Yeah. So this is fascinating to me just as a before we even start answering the question, you know, I came from the world of theatrics where I had to deal with my own nervousness and people around, you know, nervousness was an issue mm-hmm. just because it is. And everybody gets butterflies and all that. So I had experienced myself as a nervous performer and managed that. And as a director, calm people down. What? So it was in my life. I never imagined when I got in the corporate setting that I was going to talk about nervousness as much as I do. And mm-hmm. I still do. More than 20 years later, I am still talking to people about nervousness. And sometimes it's the only reason why I'm coaching them.
Wow.
It's so surprising to me. I never expected that. So just on a kind of big level, your client is not alone. Mm-hmm. The fact that she has some nervousness. Mm-hmm. So the question here is around what can she do to help herself?
And feel more confident.
So I would ask a bunch of questions. Mm-hmm. Like, what really has her worried? Because if she's worried about getting the job, well, that's actually, that needs to get compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. That doesn't belong in the room with you, right? Mm-hmm. So be present, get detached from the outcome. What are you worried about? Are you worried that they're going to ask you a question you can't answer? In which case, what question would that be? Mm-hmm. And let's figure out an answer for it. Another reason why people get nervous is, they're going to find out I'm a phony. Mm-hmm. To which I go, then wait a second. Are you in the wrong job? Are you auditioning, you know, interviewing for the wrong role? Mm-hmm. No, I'm not. But like then we just need to work on that whole imposter thing, mm-hmm. which is self-talk.
Right.
So then you need to look at really what do you do well and what do you bring in the room and what value do you add? And let's talk about successes in your last role. And mm-hmm. then there's an exercise that I do with people. So you ready? Here we go. So, can I do it with you?
Sure.
Okay. So, first you need to imagine a project or a time when you were enormously successful. And the people around you knew that you were successful. So you delivered something and people were just like, that's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, like, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Have you got a time like that in your head that you can think of?
Yes.
Yeah. So if we could roll the clock back and you walk in, let's say, to your boss or a team or whatever, and you hand this deliverable over and people are like, oh, my, that really exceeded our expectation. And now you leave the room and I get to be on your shoulder and I get to say to you, what do you want them to say about you right now? You're not in front of them. Mm-hmm. They're all looking at each other now and they're saying, oh, my gosh, Allison is so mm-hmm. What would you want them to say about you?
Informed.
Great. She's so informed. So, and you and I could probably, if I asked you to keep going, you could probably get 3 words, 5 words. Mm-hmm. I ask clients to do this. I don't care if they get 10 words or 20 words. But here's the game then, and this is something you could do with your client. Mm-hmm. Pick, for the moment, pick one of those words. Mm-hmm. And just let it literally, I'm sorry, I'm going to reuse your word, let it inform you for the moment. In other words, while you and I are talking right now, what is it like for you to be informed? Some of the words that my people use are expert, mm-hmm. presidential, knowledgeable, mm-hmm. confident, right?
Right.
So if I were going to say, let's just say confident. So for the next 90 seconds, no matter what you and I are doing, mm-hmm. whether you're talking or you're listening or whatever, just put confident in the very, very front of your mind. How does that change you? And don't pre-plan it. It's like an acting exercise. You don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But just start to literally bring it up. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's an amazing exercise. It's transformative for people. It's cool.
I felt myself sit up a little taller.
There you go.
When I said informed, that's what I want. That's what people felt in that moment, in that presentation, that she had this information we need. And I always want to feel that way. I always want to provide value and act as a resource. And going through that exercise, it made me think of those times and made me feel confident.
What was cool about what you just did, as you talked about it, you actually started to talk about your values, mm-hmm. which is another thing that I think is great for people to be able to talk about in interviews. Mm-hmm. Here's what's important to me. You might or might not use the word value, but mm-hmm. I always want to be adding value, right? Mm-hmm. That's Allison's thing.
Right.
So that would be something you could talk about in an interview. And often when people get focused on those adjectives about themselves, values come up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I once went to a talk about a book, and the book was about when you should be competing versus when you should be collaborating.
Hmm.
And they talked about an experiment where before people were interviewed, there were three groups. One group didn't do anything, the control group. Another group was nervously cramming for an interview. Okay, so they were thinking of all the things they didn't know and trying to get that information jammed into their head in the lobby.
Horrible.
Oh my gosh. But who's been through it?
Yeah, right.
Right? That's what we do. We're inclined to kind of sit in that room and panic. And the third group had to write down things that they were most proud of.
Perfect.
Their biggest accomplishments.
Yeah.
And just going into an interview, they performed so much better than the control and, of course, the opposite group just by going through that exercise. And that's something I always encourage people to do, because if all goes according to plan, you have arrived 15 minutes early,
right?
10 to 15 minutes early, and you have some things to do. So write down in your notebook, write down those things that you're most proud of, and have those at the forefront of your mind when you go into that interview. And how can you help but feel good?
That's great. I just wonder, have you given that to your client who's nervous?
I have, yes.
Good.
And we did that, and we also talked about, you know, how would your best friend respond to the self-talk that you're doing right now?
Mm.
Who, you know, we talked about it both ways. So first, Tom, if I was telling you how I'm an imposter, I can't do this job, you know, there's no way that I'll be able to succeed, what would you say to me? Which is, you would list back all the wonderful things about me. You would tell me that, of course, I could do it. And then we talked about if your best friend was saying these things to you, if you kind of go look outside yourself and think, you know, what would you tell that friend if they were in this situation? And everyone's always so much nicer to other people than they are to themselves.
Yeah. Well, we're into self-talk, mm-hmm. right? So one of the things that I am really attuned to as a coach is hearing people's self-talk. Mm-hmm. And sometimes self-talk needs to be reality checked. Because sometimes, by the way, especially when I'm in these first stage of coaching with people, I don't necessarily know them very well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if their self-talk is valid. It might be valid, right? They might mm-hmm. be an idiot. I don't know, right? So then we really look for evidence. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing is with that self-talk, is not to just assume that it's just because it's negative that it's not real, but mm-hmm. where does that show up? Mm-hmm. I mean, what evidence do you have for that? And then how do we manage it? And at some point, because people say to me, by the way, when I really beat up on myself, it motivates me.
Ah.
Now, I don't believe in that. That mm-hmm. doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, that's a good thing for you to believe. Now let's reality check that. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that really what gets you going? Maybe it does. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And how does that show up? What does that look like
right.
to you?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. maybe it makes them feel fierce. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Wow. I haven't run across anybody up until this point who has felt good about their negative self-talk or felt that it had a great function. Usually the people I'm talking with are really trying to get rid of I actually had a coach myself who called it the gremlin.
Right.
That gremlin on your shoulder who's telling you that you're not doing things right and how to get rid of that gremlin.
By the way, I don't find it motivating, and I have some suspicion that ultimately it is not a confidence builder. Mm. So over time, and I've got someone that I'm working with right now who really believes that the way he becomes competitive is with a lot of negative self-talk, and that's a motivator for him. I'm not convinced yet. And over time, he and I are going to explore that.
Sure. Sure. It's rare that these discussions are a one and done.
Oh yeah,
scenario.
No kidding.
It's
especially
a process.
In my work as a coach, which goes on for months and months and months with a particular goal in mind. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Are most of the people that you work with, is that goal in mind being a better communicator?
That's usually a component. Mm-hmm. So it's rarely that's the only reason I'm called in as an executive coach.
I see.
It's often a sub point.
Okay. So I know that, many people that are doing interviews have an actual presentation component to the interviews. So some people are being asked, and I actually have a story. I met with someone recently who she started an interview, and right at the beginning, they told her, we just want to let you know we have a little surprise for you. At the end, you're going to have to do a presentation.
Woohoo.
Oh, yikes. My gosh, right? And so, she struggled so much with just trying to get through the interview and be coherent, right? While she was thinking, what am I going to do this presentation on? Like, it put her under a tremendous amount of pressure, obviously. But a lot of people are prepared that when they're going into an interview,
they
will have to do a presentation. So thankfully, that is a rare occurrence. But those that do have to do a presentation during an interview, are there some presentation tips or tricks that you have?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Especially, so this is true for any presentation. No, I'll take that back. One style of presenting that I think is really helpful and gets people rolling, gets everyone rolling, including the presenter, is to not make it a monologue. Mm-hmm. It's not like stand-up comedy. Like, I have to carry the whole show by myself or a one-person show. Mm-hmm. It's not that. Mm-hmm. So if you, again, I'm going to assume that you've got your four slides that you have to do and you've got 15 minutes to do it and, it's really literally an audition, right?
Sure.
Don't start by figuring you're talking for 15 minutes. That's just like, oh my gosh, that's a horrible burden. Figure out the first three questions you're going to ask them.
Mm.
So frame up your presentation as a conversation. Just like you and I are having a conversation, mm-hmm. and it's not your job to ask all the questions and my job to answer only. It's not a burden like that. Mm-hmm. So that's number one, is go walk in and say, so think about a time when you did this. How was that for you? And let them talk first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to pick it up and you're going to show that you can listen under stress and you can facilitate a little bit. And then let that guide you to your content. And then, so that's all number one, okay. right? Which is ask questions, be in dialogue. Mm-hmm. Number two is, and then tell a story.
Oh.
Don't teach. Tell a story. Give an example. Like you gave an example about the client you listened to this morning. Mm-hmm. Or I gave a story about my grandmother's birthday when I was four. Mm-hmm. Or whatever. The stories are what engage people. So have an example of, I worked with a client who, or in my last company, this is what we saw, or one of the ways that people use this tool is, mm-hmm. instead of just teaching a model.
Okay. So a lot of people will subscribe to the idea that in every presentation, it's tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you just told them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
I think in general, it's a good rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. I do think it's actually how our brains work. Mm-hmm. So I do subscribe to this as a theory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a literal kind of hourglass the way you just laid it out.
Uh-huh.
Does the idea of an hourglass fit with, you know, tell them what you're going to tell them, that's
Absolutely.
A big headline, then
mm-hmm.
all the stuff, the granular stuff in the middle, then the big baseline at the bottom.
Yeah.
But I do it. I do it in all kinds of ways mm-hmm. to get the brain ready to accept an idea. Like, for example, early on, I said to you, can I tell you a story?
Mm-hmm.
And you said, uh-huh. That's a way of framing up what you're about to hear next. I have lots of those that I teach people
mm-hmm.
because it makes the listener's brain open up a little bit. In the same way that tell us, you know, if I said, well, I'm going to tell you something and it's got three parts to it, you're now ready to listen in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
That's tell them what you're about to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I do use that in lots of variations.
Mm-hmm. When I work with clients around doing an interview, when you said storytelling, we talk a lot about SOAR stories. SOAR. So it's an acronym, and it's situation, obstacle, action, and result.
Oh, that kind of SOAR.
Yeah.
Not an open sore.
No. that's a whole different story. but having a story, like you said, a story is a wonderful way to do a presentation, to speak in an interview. But oftentimes, people will tell you what they did. So they'll say the situation, obstacle, and action, but they forget the result.
Hmm.
And that's the most impactful part of the story. Oftentimes, and to completely oversimplify the SOAR model, it's like you say, I was walking down the street, situation, there was a branch in my way, and I moved it, right? So situation, obstacle, result, or obstacle, action. So there was a branch in my way when I was walking down the street, I moved it, and now everyone else is able to walk freely down the sidewalk.
Right, and that's the result
right,
and that people leave out.
Mm-hmm. And it's so much more impactful to have that result. It shows what will happen moving forward. And I actually had a client who was interviewing at Amazon. And Amazon has 14 core competencies. That's a lot of core.
Yeah.
That's another story for a different time. That's a lot of core competencies. But when he was flying to Seattle to have his interview at Amazon, he took the time on the plane to write out a SOAR story for each of those 14 core competencies.
Great idea. Good for him.
Yeah. And you know, that was probably above and beyond what most people would do. But the way that it gave him confidence in the interview and gave him all these stories, these well-thought-out stories with results to have floating around in his head, he knew in the interview that he would be speaking their language, and he had all of this information. So it was building his confidence. It was preparing him for the interview. And result, he was offered the job.
Yay.
Absolutely. So, you know, having a story and a well-thought-out story can be really impactful throughout the interview process.
Yeah. Well, and that framework that you gave is a great way to tell the story and to be sure to include the result. That's
mm-hmm.
great.
Absolutely.
Nice. Helpful.
Yeah. So as we're thinking about going through the interview process, how do you help people be memorable? So when they walk out of the room and they want people to remember those things, are there other tools that like perhaps the end of an interview would be useful? Any kind of closing statements?
Oh, that's interesting, because when you ask me about how do I help people be memorable, it is not a closing statement. It's what you do throughout. And I think there's two things that I teach people around being memorable. Mm-hmm. One, we've already talked about in a lot of variations, which is storytelling. Mm-hmm. People remember stories. They do. Mm-hmm. And just a couple quick things about stories. The stories that people remember have images in them, like me as a four-year-old at my grandmother's 60th birthday. I'm guessing that that's an image that sticks.
Absolutely.
Right? But it also had feelings in it. Right? That it was something that I was good at and my family used to tell it. And there's a lot of heart in it. Mm. And that's what makes stories sticky, is what people feel. So to be able to tell stories that have details of what people did, said, or felt. Like you just told me a story about this guy flying to Seattle, mm-hmm. working on the plane. That's an example of what he did. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of stories, those are memorable. In other words, a week later, when they're all in their conference room and they're looking at the different resumes and they're going through and they see yours and they go, oh, you remember that story she told about the guy on the airplane? Mm-hmm. Right? That's sticky. That's good. That's one way. Another way, another way to be memorable is literally use numbers. Mm-hmm. Numbers do something very particular in our brain. So going back to early in our conversation today, what were we talking about? We were talking about starting interviews, and I said, well, there's two different paths.
Right.
I'm going to guess that when you hear me say that, something happens in your brain. You either picture a fork in the road with two paths, or you picture two buckets or two folders or two, you know, a piece of paper split down the middle. Mm-hmm. Something happens in your brain. Mm-hmm. Now, if I only told you one, that would be really uncomfortable in your brain, mm-hmm. because our brain wants to fill those numbers in.
Yeah.
But when I fill in both sides for you, there's a sense of completeness and a sense that it, again, it attaches somewhere. Mm-hmm. So numbers actually help us remember things. There's a great book on this by two brothers by the name of Heath, okay. called Made to Stick.
Made to Stick.
And they're great. I think they're out of, one of them's at Stanford. I can't remember, but it's a wonderful, wonderful book. And they have lots of ideas about how to make things memorable, mm-hmm. how to make things stick. So those are two ways. Tell a story, use numbers.
Great. When you talk about numbers, it reminds me of Jennifer interviewed Larry Braman on the show very recently, who we both know well.
Yeah.
And Larry has a website called Career U, mm-hmm. My Career U. And you did a really great presentation for Larry's website about elevator pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that to heart when I'm telling people what I do as a coach. Hmm. When you talked about the two giving numbers.
Right.
And that really rang true for me, because I feel like as a coach, I wear two hats.
Oh.
And I think of being a coach. So my actual coaching hat is when my client is the expert. I'm asking them the questions to get to the answers they have, but they haven't had someone ask them the powerful questions or talked through to really realize what those answers were right below the surface. And then the second hat I wear is a consultant. And that's when I become the expert. So I'm helping with resume reviews. I'm giving a lot of advice. And the client is receiving the advice. So hearing you say to talk about things in numbers really solidified how I talk to people about what I do. Because those things are so different. While they take place in the same relationship, they're very different skills and very different expectations from what people will get from working with me. So that's been a very valuable tool for me to use the numbers.
I'm glad. Great. Well, it also seems like it's really clarified, too, what you do with people, right? Just to be able to say, well, I do two things. It's not that you do 10 things,
right?
But that's great. Nice. Nice. Cool.
Yeah, that was a wonderful webinar. So I'd highly recommend it to to people listening to our interview today, and to go back and definitely listen to Larry's interview with Jennifer as well, which can be found in the archives. So we've talked a lot about the whole interview process.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have recommendations on how people should follow up after their interview to keep that momentum going or ensure great communication, maybe via email or a note for their follow-up?
Well, So now you're in an area where the truth is I am not the expert anymore. I'm going to guess that you're the expert on this, but I'll tell you one of the things that I hear all the time and I do say to people mm-hmm. is handwritten notes are amazing. Just amazing.
Absolutely.
So that's where I would start, but I don't have a real kind of deep tool bag around this because job interviews isn't the core of what I talk about with mm-hmm. my clients. It's the core of what you talk about.
It is.
So what do you recommend?
When I talk with people about following up after an interview, I really stress the importance of personalized messages. So Tom and I worked together at a company. Tom was a coach and I was in human resources. And this company did a lot of panel interviews. So you were meeting with three and four people, and then those three or four people left the room, and another three or four people came in. And so I was on, obviously I was on one side of that interview when I was the candidate. And then I did a lot of interviews with, in that format where I was one of those four people. And I'll tell you, when a thank you note came in, we would forward it to the team. So we would share with the team what the person said. Hmm. And not in a, hey, look at this kind of way. It was just, hey, I got a thank you note from Joe. This is what I got.
And handwritten or email?
Typically, they were email.
Uh-huh.
Handwritten notes are so powerful and helpful, but I'm concerned with the speed with which managers are hiring. And I would hate for a person to have a note in the mail when they were making a decision. Between Tom and Allison, Allison's note's in the mail. We're talking about them now, and Tom's already sent one. So that gives me pause. I think that maybe if you do both, it's very nice. But I want the thank you note to be there in a really timely way. So I do encourage an email thank you note. And I have also heard of people who have a thank you note written and maybe leave it with the receptionist on the way out. But that goes to show that you didn't put any thought into it.
Yeah.
Right? You wrote it before you even met the person. So I certainly wouldn't recommend that. But perhaps an email and then, you know, a follow-up actual handwritten note is always very powerful. Or if it can be, you know, if you can ensure that it is to them as timely as possible.
And do you teach a kind of protocol around what's most powerful in those email thank yous?
Yeah, and it's really that even if you have talked to four people, to have an individual message for each of them.
Hmm.
Because you heard a little something different from each of them. You learned something. You heard maybe about a project they were doing. So when we were sending around those thank you notes, if four of us were in the room together and we had four different thank you notes, I mean, that just showed a level of attention to detail and thoughtfulness that spoke volumes.
Hmm.
So, and, you know, to send it to each individual, not four people on one email with a thank you. You know, and I think it's so important before people leave an interview to make sure that you have those email addresses so you don't have to scramble to find them later or, you know, maybe send a note to someone and ask them to forward it along. We certainly don't want to do that. But as much as you can personalize things, it creates such an impact.
Well, it goes to the issue of prep, too. Like, do you advise your clients to ask, Who will I be meeting that day?
Absolutely. If they're receiving a schedule or they can receive a schedule, that can be very, very helpful. And then they can research the people that they're meeting with. And I find that in most cases, they are receiving that information in advance.
See, I find that often people who are in the job-seeking role mm-hmm. feel like, oh, well, I don't want to look pushy. And so they won't ask questions like that, like mm-hmm. who am I meeting with?
Mm-hmm.
Who will be in the room with me?
Mm-hmm.
And they just assume that whoever they're in contact with, right? Or unless that person on that end says, you'll be meeting, you know, with Bob.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to me how unassertive people mm-hmm. get when they're going on an interview. They get in a kind of supplicant role.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it's beneficial.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, we are also live in a time, and you and I live in a city where there are many different kinds of acceptable dress codes, depending on the company.
I didn't even think about that, but yeah, no kidding.
And so I will go back to my Amazon example, but this person is in a very, very corporate, in the defense systems world, and he's wearing a suit every day. And he asked the person at Amazon, you know, is it appropriate that I come in a suit? And they said, Absolutely not.
Right.
And you know, my husband goes on jobs and job interviews in a button-down shirt and jeans, and I cringe. But that's what's appropriate for him. So it might be the case that you need to ask, you know, what's appropriate dress, because you don't want people to notice what you're wearing. You right. want to just blend in. There shouldn't be anything that takes away from your message.
Well, and certainly I'm in that situation all the time going to new clients. Every time I go to a new client, I have no idea. So I always, it's one of the things I always ask, because mm-hmm. I don't want to show up, you know, I don't want to look like Friday night
right.
if they're all looking like Monday morning, or vice versa.
Exactly.
Right? So, yeah. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Tom. We're coming up upon the time where we'll wrap up our interview, but I want people to know, where can they reach you? Where can people find you and your popular podcast?
So I'm glad you asked, because there's a lot of resources for people who are job searching. Mm-hmm. So I run a company called Essential Communications. Our website is essentialcom.com, essentialcom with two M's. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the website, there's a tab called Coaching Tips, mm-hmm. and it has an archive of over 10 years of coaching tips that I've been writing for my clients since 2005.
Wow, and those are a free resource on your
website.
Free
resources. They're all online. They're all PDFs. They're all podcasts. They're all available, and they cover all kinds of things. They're not specifically around interview, because that's not my target audience, but mm-hmm. they're about things like managing nervousness, self-talk, being memorable, personal branding, mm-hmm. all kinds of things. And you can search the archive and find what you need. So please go help yourself. And the podcast is on iTunes or whatever, and it's called The Look and Sound of Leadership.
Wonderful. I know I look forward every month to receiving your newsletter, and I know you so well, so I don't listen to the podcast. I read the newsletter, but I might as well listen to the podcast, because I hear it in your voice with your tone. I know it so well. So
great.
I really appreciate using those as a resource. Well, I can't thank you enough for being here today, Tom. I'll introduce myself again, since I'm guest hosting for Jennifer. So my name's Allison Garrido, and you'll find information from me listed in the archive, but it's Allison Garrido, and my website is allisongarrido.com. I am a career coach, and I help people find a path to a job that they'll enjoy. Next week, Jennifer will be back. She has a leadership trainer on the show named Mary Jo Laurie. I think you'll really enjoy her interview. So please do tune in next Monday at 4 o'clock to hear Jennifer's interview with Mary Jo Laurie. Thank you so much for having me today.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.